Sides of the Ball. I'm Ryan Aber, joined by Barry Trammell. After Oklahoma's 51-46 win in Lubbock, we're on the road back from Amarillo, or back from Lubbock to Amarillo. Barry, how you doing tonight?
Well, I'm getting sort of wound down. It's either 2:30 or 1:30, depending on your attitude and daylight savings time. However, still a little keyed up after that game. You know, most Oklahoma Tech games in Lubbock are fascinating on some level, and this one certainly was.
Yes, it was, Barry. And what to you is maybe the most fascinating thing about what we saw tonight at Jones Stadium?
Well, I think it was the first 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
The tone was set. Kyler Murray, two picks. Neither one good. One was he just didn't see a guy, threw and right into a safety just sitting in the zone. Didn't seem. And then he overthrows, I think it was Carson Meyer.
Yeah, Carson Meyer.
And, you know, the same Dorsey, Vontae Dorsey makes a pick, an easy pick. Ball just sailed right to him. So we have not seen that level of recklessness, or not, it wasn't so much recklessness, just, you know, bad throws, bad decisions from Kyler Murray.
Yeah, he's been so good decision-making wise all year and hasn't put himself in bad spots, just had three interceptions going into this game. But, yeah, some uncharacteristic play from Kyler Murray there early. Tech gets up 14-0, and all of a sudden you wonder just what's going to become of this game, especially Oklahoma's defense gets a stop on their very first drive of the game, and you think, well, they might be all right. And then they're put in two really tough positions, first and goal at the 3, first and 10 at the 25 on OU side, and that Tech offense really gets going, and the Red Raiders put up a lot of points there in the first half.
Yeah, and, you know, who knows how the game would have went. That got the place rocking, Jones Stadium. It put OU behind the 8-ball for the first half. It was, you know, as you mentioned, the first possession stopped by the OU defense was a nice move, because come to find out, we weren't going to see a lot of that Saturday night. But it just opened the door for the momentum and for the crowd and for the Red Raiders to all get all fired up, and it just seemed like OU was playing uphill all game long, or all first half long. And then in the second half, without Alan Bowman, the Tech quarterback, the freshman quarterback for the Red Raiders, he sort of collapses on the sidelines and whisked away to the hospital. Another collapsed lung, it appears. The defense sort of takes over for a good while with Jet Duffy, but the offense sort of stumbles for a variety of stupid reasons. So just not a very not a complete performance, not a convincing performance, not a commanding performance, but the Sooners get out of here with a victory. And there's been a lot of times in the old days where that didn't happen. You know, they haven't lost here since 09, the Sooners haven't, but they lost three straight, 05, 07, 09. So I can remember those games, and getting home from Lubbock with a win, no matter how you get it, is not a bad thing.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Oklahoma escapes, played better defensively in the second half, Barry, I thought. Even obviously Bowman's injury really changed the complexion of that game, especially in the third quarter. Texas Tech's offense got something going there in the fourth quarter, but Robert Barnes had a couple big plays on two-point conversion attempts. One caught halfway into the end zone and went 105 yards for a conversion that put Oklahoma up 5. And then a little bit later, Tech scores, tries another two-point conversion to try to cut it to 3. Or, excuse me, the first one was to cut it to the Robert Barnes was to extend the lead to 4. And then in the second two-point conversion, Robert Barnes once again gets a hand on it and knocks Jet Duffy's pass away. So Oklahoma's defense wasn't perfect by any means. They struggled with coverage quite a bit. They had some penalties that really put them in bad positions. They had some tackling issues come back up, although not as many as we'd seen a little bit earlier in the season. But in the end, they found ways to do just enough to get them out of here with the win.
Now, let me say this for their defense. I was hard on them. Everybody should be. They had a little bit of misfortune. It looks like Parnell Motley had an interception that the referees took away from him just because, you know, that yellow flag in the back of their pocket creates such an itch on their butt. They just got to throw it about every two plays. So didn't seem like interference. They called interference on Motley.
Yeah, it seemed like the receiver just sort of fell down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, listen, we all know what happened. Parnell Motley's like every other DB in America. He looked at the guy cross-eyed, and that's a flag. if you infringe on the in the personal space of a receiver, it's pass interference. And the personal space is basically if you get within 300 yards. It's on, you know, it's a little bit like a sex offender. You can't live near them. You just got to stay away from them. So, you know, it's just absurd. But with that said, a little bit of misfortune. But they still weren't very good in that first half particularly. They got lucky in the second half going against Jet Duffy, the backup quarterback, who they put the stops on. Was it three straight or four straight stops?
Three straight, I think.
And then in the fourth quarter, 17 points on three possessions for the Red Raiders. So it got a little out of hand again. But, you know, we just have to sort of live with this OU defense. I mean, Ruffin McNeil is a wonderful guy to talk to, but he's not any kind of magic elixir. He's not going to change this into some sort of defense that's going to go shut people down. You know, the two teams they beat the last 2 weeks and did a good job with defensively, Kansas State and TCU, you know, that's not exactly, Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers. They played today against each other, and the score was 14-13. So, you know, they're just going to have to win games like this. They're going to have to score a bunch and sort of hang on. When the other team has the ball, just grab the rope and hang on.
Yeah, it does seem like Trey Brown has sort of asserted himself as probably their number one corner. Texas Tech didn't try to test him much. When they did test him, Trey Brown was able to come up big. Of course, we've seen that a lot over the years with Oklahoma getting one corner that gets picked on pretty consistently and another one who doesn't get much work. But Trey Brown seems to be getting better and better there. That might be one of the few bright spots for Oklahoma defensively outside of the plays that Robert Barnes made.
I agree with you about Trey Brown, and Robert Barnes seems to be playing better.
Yeah.
Maybe they've sort of found two guys they can count on in the secondary out of five. Now, you'd like to think Brendan Radley-Hiles will come along. He didn't play tonight. Khalil Houghton didn't play tonight. I thought their safeties actually held up okay. Justin Broyles played a lot. Who else? Jordan Parker, you know, was released from witness protection. He got to play. So Tech didn't really exploit those safeties much. They picked on the corners because that's what you do anymore. And so maybe they've got some building blocks coming. I don't know. But, yeah, just sort of a blah defense. When Tech had its quarterback, the Sooners were in trouble. When Tech didn't have its quarterback, Sooners were pretty good, and then all of a sudden they got in trouble. So, you know, this was a game where the Sooners needed the offense to play fantastic, and it did after those first two picks. I mean, there's so much to like about the OU offense. Even on a night when there was a lot to pick on them about, the offensive stupidity penalties were rampant. There were drops. And you had Kyler Murray throwing two early picks. So lots to criticize about this OU offense, and yet they scored 51 offensive points and got zero cheap touchdowns.
Yeah, Kyler Murray, 20 of 35, 360 yards, three touchdowns, broke Sam Bradford's OU and Big 12 record for, what was it, 300 or game consecutive
eight
games
straight.
With three or more touchdowns.
Eight straight games with three straight touchdown
and
passes.
And Kyler Murray, 11 carries for 100 yards and a touchdown on the ground, so became the first Oklahoma quarterback in history to throw for 300 and run for 100 in the same game. Barry, we were talking about this after the game. There haven't been many who would have chances to do that in Oklahoma history.
We could only think of two. Cale Gundy, outside chance, and Baker Mayfield. And I guess Bake never ran for 100 yards, or if he did, maybe it was just under the passing. But, you know, Heupel wasn't going to do it. Jason White wasn't going to do it after the knee surgeries. Bradford wasn't going to do it. Landry Jones wasn't going to do it if you put him in a pickup and let him drive 100 yards. So, you know, it's rare the guys that could do that. Going back to the runners, you know,
there's nobody who could throw for 300.
They weren't going to throw for 300 yards.
Keith Jackson wasn't going to catch 300.
No. And going back, you know,
yards worth
now,
of passes.
Eddie Crowder, Jack mentioned, well, Jack couldn't throw a lick, but Eddie Crowder, was probably, before Stoops, Eddie Crowder's probably the most talented quarterback OU ever had. He was never going to approach 300 yards. I mean, the All-American halfbacks barely got to 100 because they spread the wealth so much. So it was historic. Kyler Murray's phenomenal. He had a couple of just unbelievable runs. He had some scrambles. You know, you could set. I could tell Tech's defense is better just athletically in the way that Murray got away from him, but man, they made it hard on him. There were a couple of plays where it was everything he could do to get away from him. So I think Tech's getting better on defense. But you play the OU offense, and you're going to pay the price.
You know, I think Kyler Murray's best run might have been one where he only got, I think it was 3 yards. He had was way behind the line of scrimmage, I think 15 or 16 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and flat out just used his speed to get away and set up an official to be sort of a pick man for him. So he's able to get some extra yards out of that and keep Oklahoma alive there. I think it was in the first half, second quarter, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you know, Kyler's a wonderful player. Now, I don't know what he was thinking in those first two interceptions. He said Tech did some things that they weren't sure about on the first one. They didn't expect. I think it sounds like the safety just deked him. Got him to think he's going one way, and he went the other. And you know, that's a dangerous game to play. You need to know. You need to be able to see where you're throwing and what you're doing. But he's playing at such a high level that we've come to expect a little too much out of him, if you ask me. In all likelihood, that's what we're doing. So when it was, when it was necessary, he produced. So, you know, I think the Sooners are glad he's on their squad.
Yeah, there's zero doubt about that. Barry, in the fourth quarter, Oklahoma runs for 122 yards. Some of that Kyler Murray, but a lot of it rested on the shoulders of Trey Sermon, who's been the number one running back since Rodney Anderson went out, but had to take an even bigger role today with Marcellus Sutton. The news that he's out for the season after breaking his leg in Wednesday's practice. Kennedy Brooks only had 4 carries today for 21 yards, averaged 5.3 yards a carry. But Trey Sermon, 26 carries, 206 yards, a career high, 3 touchdowns, 7.9 yards a carry. Just another example of how great Trey Sermon has been and how versatile he is.
He is starting to become my favorite player on the team. I love it when he gets the football. He gets a whole lot of yards after he's hit. So he's sort of an ox to run. But he's also agile in the open field. You know, he gets a lot of touchdowns weaving. He weaves his way to touchdowns. Runs over guys near the line and then weaves away to touchdowns in the secondary. And it's very impressive to me. I went back and added it up. I need to talk to the Sooners and ask them what they're thinking. He carried 17 times on first down. He carried 7 times on second down. He only carried twice on third down. So I found that interesting, but he's really producing, and I thought he was phenomenal tonight.
Yes, he was, and Oklahoma's going to need him to continue to be phenomenal given the lack of depth there now with just the three scholarship guys, Sermon, Brooks, and T.J. Pledger, the freshman, at that spot. So they had a lot of depth there early in the season, and that's pretty much gone away. We've seen that happen with Oklahoma several times in its history, in its recent history. But Barry, talking about receivers, Lee Morris just keeps doing what Lee Morris does tonight with a couple touchdowns on four catches, 101 yards.
Well, he's phenomenal. I'd throw to him more. Although, let me just say this. This is my mea culpa. Record it for a time and memorial. I was wrong about Grant Calcaterra. I was dogging him for dropping passes early in the year. He had two excellent catches tonight. One, sort of a diving one-hander, took a vicious hit that they called targeting and then overruled it, but held on to the ball, took another big hit, held on to the ball. He's really turning into a nice player. But Lee Morris is so clutch. He finds a way to get free, and Kyler throws him the ball, and you get a touchdown. So, I like what Lee Morris does.
That touchdown run that he had along the sidelines, there's a couple points where it didn't look like there's any way he was going to be able to stay in bounds or avoid getting tackled, and somehow he's able to stay in bounds and get in the end zone. Just an incredible play. But, Barry, to your point about Calcaterra, he's been much better these last couple weeks and seems like his hands have been better. He's holding on to some balls that he would have dropped early in the season. At least two out of his three catches tonight were right there where he took a pop as soon as he caught it and was able to hold on. So some big plays for him. Let's talk about that targeting call for a second, though. At the point when it happened was just after Kyler Murray's first interception and Tech's first touchdown, and then all of a sudden Dorsey comes up and pops Calcaterra after Oklahoma picked up a first down, and you think that they're going to – one, after the penalty flag's called, you think Oklahoma's going to be in great position and have a first down about the 25 or 30-yard line. Then all of a sudden that review negates the targeting call, so it negates those 15 yards. And Cody Ford, with one of those penalties that you talked about earlier, or was it Cody Ford? Yeah, it was Cody Ford.
Yeah.
Cody Ford, with one of those penalties that we talked about earlier, sort of grabs a Tech guy around the neck and gets another penalty. Oklahoma finishes with 10 penalties for 113 yards, but that – I was shocked that targeting got overturned, first of all.
I couldn't. I you know what? The replays I saw on the television screen sure looked like targeting. But, you know, a week ago I spent a night down at the Big 12 office, and you get all kinds of replays that you don't necessarily get.
On the broadcast,
so I'm not going to criticize the replay decision. That was a huge play, though, because the Sooners, the completion went to the 49, and if there's targeting, Well, then it moves on, and all of a sudden, Sooners are on the Tech 36. Instead, it goes 15 yards the other way because of Cody Ford clotheslining this Tech guy who was sort of messing with him. And they're back at their own 34, and then Murray throws the pick. So, and the Sooners did dumb stuff like that. Bobby Evans got an unsportsmanlike on an extra point. C.D. Lamb made the game harrowing. I mean, they're up, what are they up? They're up 35-31, I think, and driving. And Lamb makes a really nice catch down to the 7-yard line and gets into it with some guy and, you know, doesn't quit when the other guy sort of antagonizes him and does whatever he did, pushed him or whatever they called him for, flag, mouths off or gets mad or whatever. And then so he goes from a roughness to an unsportsmanlike. All of a sudden, the Sooners, they've just thrown a nice pass, nice catch, big gain, and they've lost yardage. They're back on the 37. They end up punting. So you can't go doing that. Sooners had 113 yards tonight in penalties, 10 penalties. 60 of those yards were on dead ball fouls, dead ball personal fouls. And it wasn't even the defense. It's the offense doing it. Bobby Evans, Cody Ford, C.D. Lamb twice. Those are the things that Lincoln Riley seemed more perturbed with his team than ever I've seen him before in the postgame.
Yeah, he really was upset about that stuff, about some of the stuff that that they did. So it was an interesting post-game atmosphere, which it always has been in Lubbock. At least we didn't have the Red Raider guy yelling that game during the J.D. Runnels era when Texas Tech beat the Sooners and the well-lubed fan was screaming. But, Barry, now we move into Bedlam Week. We still don't know what time it's going to be. Still waiting for a television announcement, which will come at some point Sunday, sometime between probably 8 in the morning and 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I would imagine. But an interesting bedlam, although maybe not what we had expected before the season.
Well, for all the troubles that we've been talking about for the Sooners, I mean, the Cowboys have them in spades. I mean, OSU to stay in this game is going to have to score 7 touchdowns because OSU's offense is not very good. Anybody see Charlie Brewer today? Gets into the game late and takes Baylor. He gets 3 possessions. Baylor scores 3 touchdowns. Part of it was Charlie Brewer's mobility and ability to evade the rush. I really haven't been paying attention. How's Kyler Murray at that? How does he evade the rush? Does he do all right?
I don't know. I think he might be okay at that.
So, I mean, I'm hard-pressed for somebody to throw out a number that the Sooners are going to score and that I would say, oh, that's way too much. That's way too much. You're going to have to put that number high. I'm not saying I'm going to predict that, but if somebody says, well, OSU might score 63, I say, I can see that. OU might score 63. I'd say, I can see that. OU might score 70. I'd say, I can see that. I mean, this is a bad defense in Stillwater, and this is a fabulous offense in Norman that might have their coaches, the coach might have their attentions this week. So, and the Sooners are so multiple. They can just do so many things. I charted the game, and they ran extensive power formations on Saturday night. I think it was 16 times they snapped the ball with only 2 wideouts on the field. When you do that, you're running power. You got A lot of times they had both fullbacks on the field, Hall and Meyer.
Yeah.
And they were phenomenal. Murray was 5 for 5 with a bunch of big plays, passing out of that set. And that doesn't include an interference penalty against Baylor. And Trey Sermon ran great out of that power package. So, you know, they come at you with 4 wideouts. They come at you with the power. They got all kind. Tonight they, they reintroduced the Wildcat. They snapped the ball to Trey Sermon twice.
Yeah.
With Murray on the field. You know how they get Murray with the two backs right next to him. Well, they did that formation, except he was one of the halfbacks, and Trey Sermon was playing quarterback, and they snapped to right to Sermon, and he makes the first down. So, or I think it's touchdown on one of the plays.
Yeah, one of them was a touchdown.
So they just come at you with so much. They're really going to score big on everybody. Just can they stop you? That's really the story of this Oklahoma season.
Yeah, that's definitely the thing to watch for this team moving forward. They've got home against Oklahoma State next week, home against Kansas, and then finish the season against West Virginia the day after Thanksgiving in Morgantown. So it should be an interesting finish. I don't think Oklahoma's offense is going to have too much problems the next couple weeks. But Barry, just as I'm thinking about it, talking about it, go back to another thing they did out of that, which that set you were talking about. I think that throw to Jeremiah Hall
came there too, which is something different
for them.
That's right. A lot of OU fans were introduced to Jeremiah Hall tonight. If you follow the team, you know, he's like the backup fullback. He gets some run, but they don't throw him much. But, yeah, you know, Lincoln just knows how all this stuff works. And, you know, he knows what's going to spring a guy open, and that's one of the things that does it. So it's a case of if this offense doesn't do stupid stuff, then the number's going to be huge. Tonight they got 49 offensive points, still doing stupid stuff, interceptions, 60 yards of penalties, needless, and still they roll. So they're a wonder. They're a sight to behold. There's no doubt about that.
And Barry, we'll wrap it up talking about some big picture stuff in the Big 12 and nationally. What do you make about what happened elsewhere in the Big 12 today, especially with Texas and West Virginia, which sort of had the feeling of an elimination game when you talk about the three teams that I think most people expect two of them to be playing the first week of December down in Arlington?
Well, that was a monumental win for West Virginia. I love the spirit with which they won. A two-point conversion at the end of the game. I love it when a coach does that. And not cataclysmic, but it was a pretty discouraging defeat for the Longhorns, because Texas's problem is now, you know, they still got a couple of tough games starting with Saturday down here in Lubbock, and then they host Iowa State, who's probably the hottest team in the league.
Yeah.
Team playing the best right now is probably Iowa State. So, Iowa State at Texas could be for a spot in the title game, depending on what happens with OU West Virginia. It's all going to be great theater, but, you know, West Virginia showed their chops. We've been waiting all season. Their game against North Carolina State was weathered out. Then they go to Iowa State and get waxed, and they really didn't have a good win. They'd come to Lubbock before Tech was playing great. Tech played, you know, it was similar to what happened to Tech tonight in that Tech West Virginia game. Alan Bowman gets hurt. He has the collapsed lung.
Yeah.
There in, I think it was late second quarter. Jet Duffy comes in. Jet Duffy actually rallied them to within, what was the final, 7 points, I think, or whatever it was. Played very well. tonight, Duffy didn't really rally them. They played worse with him. But, you know, this was a marquee win for West Virginia in Austin today. And what we've got now is we've got two huge games in the next 3 weeks. All kinds of games will determine the league race. But the two big ones, OU at West Virginia on Thanksgiving Friday and Iowa State at Texas the Saturday before that.
Yeah, it should be a fun closing few weeks of the Big 12 schedule. Barry, nationally today, is the big thing was that Alabama beats LSU. I think that score was 29-0. Notre Dame beat Northwestern. Really everybody at the top, with the exception of LSU, obviously, it comes out with a win. One, do you think Oklahoma moves up to 6? When the committee releases their rankings this week, or do you think things change up for them?
Yes, I do think I do think the Sooners move up to 6th. I think it was a disappointing day because there were two teams that really would help the Sooners if they would lose. One is Notre Dame, one is Michigan. Both of them had losable games today. Notre Dame monkeyed around a lot with Northwestern, but ended up winning by 10. Your good friends at Ann Arbor took Penn State to the woodshed. So, you know, it looks like the Wolverines are going to be a load. So, you know, that's going to be a tight fit. If the Sooners win out, can they get in the playoffs? I don't know. It's not a for sure at all.
No,
but concerning Alabama Day, it does appear to me that the University of Alabama is prepared to field a representative football team for the rest of the year. I think they're going to be competitive with most of the teams remaining on their schedule.
I would tend to agree with that. Alabama took a big step up in competition today. The only ranked team I think they played before today was Texas A&M, who was, I think it was 23rd when they beat them 45-23, but not a whole lot of meat on Alabama's schedule, really, outside of this game, although they do play Mississippi State next week, and then obviously Auburn there at the end. But I think Alabama just sort of proved yet again just why they're the number one team. There's been a lot of people who've outside of Alabama that have questioned that on some level just because of their schedule, but they just keep whipping opponents, and Clemson really does the same thing as we saw today with their big win over Louisville. Beat them 77-16. They scored 59 on Florida State last week, and just that offense for Clemson just keeps rolling right along.
Yeah, I will bow down at the temple of Alabama. Clemson, I'm not as excited about. The ACC is about a mediocre of an outfit as I can imagine. So I'm not prepared to get all fired up about Clemson. Florida State and Louisville are literally ghosts of teams. What's the zombie show? The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
That's what the ACC is. They got a bunch of programs, The Walking Dead. North Carolina, Florida State, Louisville, Virginia Tech, in some ways Miami, Georgia Tech. They got a bunch of teams that you see the name and you think, well, they're either they've been good over the years, they've been great over the years. But if you watch them play, you think, golly, these guys are terrible. Pitt might make the ACC title game.
Yeah,
it might be Pitt versus Clemson.
Pitt is 4-1 right now and leading the Coastal Division of the ACC.
Let me tell you what Texas Tech is doing right now. They're trying to figure out how they can be transplanted to the Coastal Division of the ACC.
Yeah, that division takes a bite out of it when Virginia Tech's not very good and when Miami's not very good.
Well, North Carolina, the whole dang league except for Clemson has just sort of shuttered up the windows. That's one thing I'll say about the SEC. Alabama's dominant, but the rest of them, you know, they pick up their swords and fight. The ACC just sets hey, we'll just beat each other, and somebody will get to go to a bowl game, and somebody will get to go to the title game, and we'll all count our money.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens moving forward, but we're going to go ahead and wrap it up as we get, I think, relatively close to Amarillo. Hopefully we'll be there before too long here at, what is it, 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning, depending on your
attitude.
Attitude. What's your attitude right now, Barry?
I'll use all ambiguity to your advantage, so I'm going to say it's 3 a.m., and it's more impressive if people find out that we're this insightful at 3 a.m.
Well, we woke up. From the time we woke up, this feels like 3 a.m. at least. So hopefully we made sense throughout this whole thing, but thank you so much for joining us. And thank Joe Masato, who did not make it onto the podcast today, but he was the driver. We wouldn't want him to take his eyes off the road, so we appreciate that. But thank you so much for listening. You can check out our work every day at newsok.com and every morning in the Oklahoman for the best OU coverage anywhere.